Rose, Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are in our last half hour until the weekend, and I am so excited for this guest because I have followed him basically since I think I started as Goes Wisconsin. He's a very good Twitter follow. But this is the first time we actually get to talk. So our guest for this half hour is Professor Mike Wagner, who is a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communications at UW-Madison, where he directs the Center for Communication and Civic Renewal, which may be why I like following him, because I care very much about communication and civic renewal. So welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you. I'm excited to have the chance to talk to you finally.
And so there's so many different things that we can talk about. But to start with, I wanted to talk about Course Correct, because I found out about this, I think it was about a month or so ago. There was an article that came out that Wisconsin Watch is joining or is part of the project now. And I'm going to let you, because I'm not going to be able to explain it as well as you, but Course Correct is basically something that you at UW-Madison and the group that you're working with has developed to try to work on this massive problem of misinformation and disinformation. So beyond that very rude explanation, what is Course Correct?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, that's a good explanation. So, you know, right now, trust in information is kind of the bedrock for what it takes for a democratic society to maintain itself. If we can't trust information, it becomes very difficult to make any other kind of choice about who to vote for, what policies to advocate for, what policies to change, you know, all that stuff. And we're living in an era where there's incredibly difficult challenges, to say the least, when it comes to how we think about trusting information that we get about what is verifiably true. And what we want to do with Course Correct is to be a one-stop shop for misinformation detection, correction, and implementation, so that we can help journalists understand what kinds of information are flowing out there on social media. How big are these networks? Because if somebody's, you know, posting and they're posting something on Twitter and it's not true and they have six followers and no one's retweeting it, it's annoying, but who cares? Not many people are seeing it. Whereas if someone posts something that's not true and it gets retweeted by 500 people, and then that means it goes from being seen by 1,000 people to 15,000 people, and then even a couple hundred in there retweet it, now it's out to 40, 50, 60,000 people and all of their followers. And so all of a sudden, this one bit of misinformation that's not true can be seen by 100,000 people over the course of a matter of a few days, or of course, when they go viral, even more. And so we want to help journalists first understand which misinformation is trending, which networks are growing, and what is the nature of that misinformation. Is it about vaccines? Is it about election administration? Is it about, you know, the safety of food we eat? What is the misinformation about? And who's sharing that misinformation? And who's just receiving it? Once we know that, journalists can then decide for themselves, this is important to us. We want to investigate this issue. We want to write a story about what's true, and we want to, you know, publish that story. And then what we want to then do is help the journalists get that message out, not just to their audience, but also into the networks where the misinformation is actually spreading, so that we can literally watch in real time, is the size of the network that's spreading misinformation growing or shrinking? Did correcting the misinformation help or not? And that way we can start to learn what kinds of corrections are the most likely to help and which ones backfire and make problems worse. And so Course Correct is a kind of a digital dashboard where we'll show journalists what misinformation is trending. They'll then choose to write stories about it or not. It's up to them. Like, we don't want to legislate how they do their job. And then once they do write those stories, we want to help them get those messages into the networks where the misinformation is trending, and then monitor in real time whether it's working. And so we have funding from the National Science Foundation to do this work. And part of what they're helping us fund is to do some pilot partnerships. We're doing one at the city level in Madison with the Capital Times, one at the state level, as you mentioned, with Wisconsin Watch, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and one at the national level with Snopes. And so each of those organizations will be able to hire a reporter to be sort of a misinformation reporter. And they'll be able to use our tool, and we'll be able to then test, how well does it work? Are there things that we need to do that journalists realize we need to do that we didn't think of? Are there things that they wish we had done that we didn't? Are there features that we thought would be really cool that just don't fit into journalist workflow and we shouldn't use it? We'll learn that from these kind of test cases over the next 2 years, and then hopefully use that information just to scale up and make our tool available to newsrooms around the country.
It's so interesting, Michael, and I don't know if you had a chance to see this because this just broke today, but NBC News did a deep dive into this claim. There are at least 20 GOP politicians who are running for office who are claiming that there are litter boxes in schools that kids use who identify as furries. So NBC...
Yeah. Well, wrong, but yeah, I've heard the story.
It is wrong that this happened. But it is not information.
So NBC just released this story today, and it started on a podcaster, a very popular podcaster's show, who told a former U.S. rep that a litter box was installed in a school his friend's wife worked at for a girl who identifies as an animal. And that went viral and then started showing up in Facebook posts and mom groups and all those things. The deep, dark, tragic part of this is that there are apparently a couple of schools in Colorado who do have buckets with litter in them in case of another mass school shooting and kids can't get to the bathroom.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've seen this story and I've seen misinformation about this. And actually, as is often the case, when it goes viral like it did today, it's actually had a couple of months of bubbling in different pockets of circles on social media. And so there have been bits and pieces of these sorts of phony stories, and they follow a very similar playbook like this one. They take a nugget of information that's true. There are some buckets full of litter in some schools. That's true. Why they're there is not the part that's true anymore. Now they take that information to say, we're going to use that to tell a lie and spread it for our own political purposes, right? And that's a classic way that misinformation spreads. The same thing happened in 2016 after the election, when Donald Trump had won the 2016 presidential election. He went to Austin, Texas to give a speech at a rally, and somebody took a photograph of some buses and said, I found the buses where they're busing in protesters to have these fake protests. And it was retweeted by thousands of people. It made its way into the kind of right-wing media ecology, and Gateway Pundit and Breitbart and all these other places shared that story. Donald Trump himself tweeted that story. Millions of people saw it. Those buses were taking accountants from one hotel to another at an accounting conference. There were buses in Austin. They weren't full of protesters. They weren't paid for and bused in to pretend to protest, but they were there. And that's how misinformation spreads. You take a nugget of something that's true and tie it to something else for your own political purposes.
And so obviously, because you are a professor we're talking to Mike Wagner, who is a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication for UW-Madison. And since maybe that is the answer to my next question, but it feels like when we talk about misinformation or disinformation and the massive problem that it presents, there's multiple inroads as far as trying to curb the spread and the problem. There's the platforms, so that'd be Twitter, yep, Facebook, Instagram. There are the consumers. There are those people like me who talk for 3 hours a day and try to be accurate and not say things that are wrong, but sometimes that happens. And then there's the journalists who are either deciding what to report on. So for you and for Course Correct, why did it feel important to focus on the journalist aspect of it?
So journalists are already on the front lines of trying to report things that are verifiably true. And like even in what you were mentioning, right? So you're on the air 3 hours a day, you're trying to say what's true. If you get something wrong, you'll say so later. Right. You'll say, we said something, it turned out not to be true. Right. We'll make a correction. Right. Legitimate news organizations correct their mistakes. Most people and illegitimate news organizations don't correct their mistakes. Right. And so we wanted to work with journalists whose job is to report the verifiable truth, who can lose their careers if they're caught fudging information, right, and pretending things are true when they're not, and publishing those stories or broadcasting those stories. And so we wanted to work with them because they have a proven track record in this area, and because they have done the work to figure out whether claims are true or false or true under some circumstances or not. Where they're struggling is what do we fact check? There's so much misinformation out there. And how do we know if they're working or if they're making the problem worse, right? Sometimes when you fact check, you actually amplify the thing that's not true. And, you know, I'm sure many people listening right now are paying rapt attention and really enjoying it. Other people are driving, right? Or they're cooking lunch, or they're, you know, like in Madison, the MMSD has a day off for teacher in service. And so parents are flying around watching their kids, but also listening. And so they're not catching everything with rapt attention. And so we can sometimes elevate misinformation and amplify it, even when we're trying to debunk it. And so we're trying to find what are the best strategies to debunk misinformation that doesn't have the backfire effect of amplifying it as well. And so that's one of the reasons we want to help journalists. The other thing is that so much research in fact-checking has focused on, well, can we teach people what's true or not? And for people who already think they know what's true and are really confident in their thoughts, even if they're wrong, they're almost impossible to reach. But there are plenty of people who just, when you ask them if something's true or not, they'll just say, I don't know. And these are the people that we can help. And so when we help journalists figure out who to target with their messages on Course Correct, we're not targeting the person who's spreading the misinformation. Mm-hmm. They're probably a lost cause from what we can do to help them share things that are true. We want to target the people who are seeing that person spread misinformation. People who were like, well, I hopped on Twitter to find out what's going on today, and this message is viral, maybe it's true. We want to be able to say, these things are true, these things aren't, and here's how we know that. Here's a link to a story that fact checks that for the people who are trying to stay informed and have a hard time adjudicating between what's true and what isn't.
And that's what I think is so interesting. In a small anecdote, even between Jane and I trying to do the show, there was a couple of weeks ago, there was a conversation on Reddit as far as a woman who was disabled, and she had gone on TikTok, she had gone on YouTube saying she had people at her Airbnb who tried to sue her for, you know, subjecting them to her disability. And the only reason I found out, so we were going to do a whole segment on it. We were going to talk about disability and representation and all this stuff based on this story. And it was only because I saw the notification, which, you know, 50-50 chance that I am paying attention, that I saw an additional Reddit thread that proved that she was a scammer. And so she got all of the, you know, and so it's like the ability for the consumer side and the responsibility put on them that they need to fact everything when that's not their job.
Right.
You know, and it's like, do you have the time to even be paying attention or to follow back up with the information that you're consuming sometimes through osmosis because you just have it on? And so the responsibility, I think you're right, as far as the people who are putting the information out there, but not, there's not always great actors as far as when it comes to the information trying to be put out.
That's right. And the Reddit example reminds me of one of my old graduate students who's now a professor at Washington State named Jordan Foley, who studied how when there's a lot of posts about something on Reddit, even if it's like conspiracy theories, if there's a high volume, it's a signal to legitimate news organizations that we should pay attention to this. And so sometimes the higher the volume of conversation on social media about something, even if it's not true, generates Fox News and MSNBC and CNN to cover it. Mm-hmm. And if the cable channels start covering it and have segments talking about it, that encourages network television news and large newspapers to cover it too. And so sometimes things that aren't true and are getting a ton of traction on social media find their way into the legitimate media ecosystem, sometimes to get debunked, but sometimes just to discuss, which is, you know, kind of a dangerous place for us to be.
Absolutely. Well, there's so many more questions I have. So stick around. We're going to have Professor Mike Wagner. We'll be here when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Mike Wagner, who is a professor in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at UW-Madison. And this might be an unfair question since we only have 8 minutes until the end of the show. So maybe we'll just have to bring you back to answer it more in depth. But in your bio, on your UW professor page, it says your research, teaching, and service are animated by the question, how well does democracy work? So how well does it work, Professor Wagner?
Well, in Wisconsin, it works less well than it did a few years ago.
Yes.
And what do I mean by that? Like, what are we measuring? So in one way that it's not working as well as it did, we know from work we've published in the last couple of years that not everybody has equal access to the ballot box. We know that Hispanic voters in Wisconsin wait in line longer, about three times longer in line to vote than white Wisconsinites do. We know that Black Wisconsinites have a longer commute to their polling place than other Wisconsinites do. And so there's not equal access to that voting. And the policies that have been passed in recent years, and in some cases then subsequently rescinded in recent years, that are aimed to try to mitigate that problem, don't work on the populations that are affected. So early voting, ballot drop boxes, absentee voting, these are not strategies that Hispanic voters and Black voters in Wisconsin tend to use as compared to wealthier white voters in Wisconsin who tend to use those policy advantages, which isn't to say they're bad things. It's just to say that the people that the policies were intended to help have greater access haven't borne fruit.
I haven't seen it, yeah.
So just in terms of the sheer the base level of what you have to have in a democracy of everybody should be who's a legal voter should have equal chance to do so. We don't clear that bar anymore in Wisconsin. Another example is the level and quality of debate that exists among our lawmakers when they're trying to decide which pieces of legislation to pass. And one thing that we found, and really the group that found this first, and we've subsequently corroborated it in our own work, was Wisconsin Watch, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, found that during especially the Governor Walker era, there was way less time given to public discussion of major legislation that passed. So when there were big changes that were taking place, there was less public discussion, less public debate. The bills got passed a lot faster. So you might interpret that as a more efficient government, but our interpretation is that it's giving people less of an opportunity to become aware of and communicate with their lawmakers about large changes that are coming down the pike in terms of public policy. Another example is our elected officials' willingness to believe what's true and help to foster things that increase the trust that we have in our most critical democratic institutions. And so we spent a lot of money in our state on an investigation of an election where we already knew who won. We didn't learn anything new in that investigation. And the only thing that we really learned is that it's increased the percentage of citizens in our state who don't trust election results, mm-hmm. even though the election results were trustworthy and were verified multiple times by multiple actors as being trustworthy. And so the confidence we have on our system is down, the access to the voting franchise is down, our level of public debate is quicker. One in three Wisconsinites say that they've stopped talking politics with a friend because it's too contentious. One in five Wisconsinites say they just ended the friendship. They won't even talk about the Packers or the Badgers or the weather or church. So it's just too much. And so these are not things that happen in a healthy democratic society. We ought to be able to talk across lines of difference. We ought to be able to agree on things that are verifiably true, even if they're bad for our side. And it's what's really, I think, kind of, I'll stop pontificating in a second. What I think is sort of weird is that we don't do this in other aspects of our lives. Like, I'm from Minnesota, right? So I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. If I went around claiming the Vikings had won 4 Super Bowls, when in fact they've won 0 Super Bowls, I would be laughably and accurately dismissed as a loon, right? it's absolutely an incontrovertible fact that the Minnesota Vikings have not won a Super Bowl. And it's probably a fact that they'll never win one.
Oh.
But they've never won one, right? And I'm a fan. I would love it if they did. They're not gonna, probably, right? But they haven't. And so I can't claim that they have. And if I do, I should be castigated and mocked and, you know, not taken seriously as a person to trust. We have people doing that about our elections, and there's just not real consequences for them. And that's dangerous for a democracy.
Absolutely.
That's such a good point, Michael. And I get so frustrated when Trump came down the escalator when he first started running, and I was talking to various ad agencies and things about some of the spots that he was running. And it's like, if we can't all agree on gravity, we got nothing. We have to have some starting point of logic. And I guess I'm glad to know that now I don't have to try and convince people who don't believe in gravity that gravity exists, because that's going to be a futile exercise. But we do have to have some commonalities of realities.
We do. And it's hard to encounter a friend or a loved one who is clearly believing in something that's absolutely false. And unfortunately, the strategy of just sharing the facts is not one that works. If facts work, we wouldn't have to do it, right? Mm-hmm. They would just have known that. And so we have to rely on our relationships with folks, and that can be really helpful, right? We can use the fact that we're a trusted partner with someone or friend or whatever in our lives to build trust and say, here's why I believe this. Tell me why you don't. And we can share information. But there are folks, as you say, who are just, who are too far gone. And it's not each citizen's individual responsibility to try to persuade every person who fails to see the verifiable truth that some things are true. I think we, it's incumbent upon us to try, but at some point you have to protect your own sanity.
Well, and it is. I mean, we only have 2 minutes left, but we had Sarah Gajdluski on earlier, and we talked about how words matter. And in reality, so much of since we started this show, what I've realized is that in the conversations I'm having with down ballot candidates who are having conversations with constituents that are across the spectrum of their political leanings, but in reality, most of us do want the same things. And yet it so often feels like we are living in two or more different worlds as far as how everyone can watch the debate last night and come away with such totally different feelings as far as what was happened and how it should have been interpreted and who you make excuses for and who you rally behind. And sure. I'm hoping that this project is very successful in how it can help this massive problem. It's obviously only one piece of it, because it'd be nice to have the agreement that gravity exists.
Right. And, and it's okay that there are disagreements about some things, right? Like some people are going to argue that, the average tax rate on the wealthy should be higher, and some are going to argue it should be lower. And it's okay that people have different opinions those and can advocate about those. What we can argue about is whether one policy or another contributed to a growing economy or a contracting economy. That we have data for that stuff. So those are the things we need to be able to come together on, are things we have evidence for, and continue to advocate for what we care about in the other aspects of our lives together.
Absolutely. Well, this was certainly not enough time, so we're going to have you back, Professor Mike Wagner. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us about Course Correct. We will link all that information on our website. But thank you for joining us. All right, that'll do it for us this week on As Goes Wisconsin. We'll see you next week.